take three. Okay. So just to add a little bit, to close off Matana Manasa Hatzir, so we have to have in mind that we've always wanted to come back to it. You should actually make that part of the Hadron, Manasa Hadron. So learning Manasa, it's probably some kind of Musar word in that you learn Manas Lachzor. So, well, God willing, always find more in this sugya, but just to mention towards the end, so it comes out that the conclusion is that by Pidgin Aben, really Matana Manasa Hachzir is effective. Right? Remember that the Gemara's conclusion is that if you're trying to figure out why we see some inconsistency, at the end of the day, Matana Manasa Hachzir is good, but don't do it in Kiddushin because of whatever concern it is that we spent the past couple days talking about. So we also mentioned that it's interesting that the Gemara assumes that there's really one answer to this question, that you'd think that a lot of these mitzvos, these categories where it's being discussed, may have differences between themselves that should allow for different answers. But the assumption of the Gemara is that, that there's one answer to the question, Matan Al Manas L'Hachzir is either good or not good, and we should have an approach throughout. So in that context, Pidgin Aben is brought in as something that Matan Al Manas L'Hachzir is effective for. So that's surprising and that's not surprising. In light of what we've said so far about how Matan Al Manas L'Hachzir works and what it should work for and what it shouldn't work for, is that surprising or is that not surprising? What would you say? You would expect it to work for Pidgin Aben? You'd expect it not to work? What do you think? Yes?
I think for Pidgin Aben, kind of the question is, like, what's the objective that Pidgin Aben is?
Ah, right. So clearly that's something we're going to have to figure out. So now, take that further.
So if the point is, like, to put the money in the Kohen's pocket, then you can't achieve that with Matana Manas L'Hachzir. But if the goal of Pidgin Haben is more than the Tina on behalf of the father, then that would be able to accomplish the goal.
Okay, so that seems to follow along the lines of what we were talking about in the context of Kedushin and the other things, that, well, let's figure out what we're really trying to do with Pidgin Haben. Is Pidgin Haben about just giving? In which case, maybe giving with the yo-yo, Amanas L'Hachzir, is still effective. We call this sight giving. Or we should say that it's really something that the pidgin, that the kohen is due, that you have to get to him. So then we would have thought that Pidgin Aben should not allow for Matana Manas L'Hachzir. The other hands that went up before, did you want to say something similar, something different? There were some other hands up before. Same idea? So if you want to say this Gemara should teach us something about this, so then it sounds like Pidgin Aben basically is really a mitzvah to do this act of giving, perhaps in a symbolic way, while it's not really something that's supposed to go into the Kohen's pocket necessarily. And that point is raised by Rabbi Chanan Wasserman and a few others. Rabbi Chanan is here in the Kovet Shirim to Kiddushin. He makes that point that that's what's the impression you get about Pidgin Aben. He says, if that's true, so then, what's a little bit surprising is that the rule for Pidgin Aben that comes out from a number of Gemaras is that if there's a suffix of the situation, let's say you have a situation, and many such examples, where you're not sure if there's a chiyuv of Pidgin Aben. So what's the rule? We say there, you're not sure if you have to give 5 slayim to the kohen. So what's the rule? You would think that should be the rule, right? So logically, it would flow that, all right, this is a mitzvah, so mitzvah min haTorah, so let's say sofik derais l'chorah. But what's the rule really? The rule actually seems to be, as emerges from a number of places in Shas, that hamotzi mechavero olivaraya, that the Kohen is considered to be the motzi, he's the one who's asking for the money, and it's up to him to prove that he deserves the money. So, for example, the Mishnah Becharis, you want to see one of the examples, Mishnah Becharis and Daf Mem Tes, the Mishnah there says that, let's say a person had 2 sons, twins. So, let's assume that it's a suffix, which one is the Bechor? That's how the Mishnah treats it. I don't know why that's such a premise, because even Bismanehem, they can still tell which child comes out first. It's not really a suffix, although maybe the question is other aspects to the suffix. All right, so let's assume it's a suffix as to which of the twins is considered to be the Bechor. So the father only has to pay one set of five slime. And also, if it should happen that one of these babies should die before the chiyuv, before the 30th day, so then the father can claim that he's pater, because he can say, who knows, maybe the one who died, he was really the bechor. And it's up to the kohen to have to prove it, which presumably he can't do, so therefore the father is pater. So I ask Shlomo Chanan, he doesn't answer this. Shlomo Chanan leaves it, he says, this is a little bit of a contradiction for him. He says he's not sure. On the one hand, the fact that Matana Manachsa Hachzir works, that seems to suggest that it's really about Messina, it's not about the Kohen actually deserving it. But on the other hand, the fact that we say Hamotze Mechaver Ol Haraya is an implication that it really is kind of a monetary issue between two people, and therefore Matana Manachsa Hachzir, you would think, should not work. So that leaves it as a tzarachian. So it's a powerful question. There are those who suggest that you can compare this. Here's a little bit of synergy, or at least a review points, that we spoke about in the context of ribbis. Now, we mentioned that ribbis is an unusual kind of din, and that it seems to be a monetary issue between two people, that Mel is not allowed to take, Mel being the lender, is not allowed to take ribbis from Louis being the borrower. But, and then even if Louis says it's okay, I'm oichel, I want to give it to you, still that's the surprising part. He's not allowed to. And there was a machlokas, if you recall, we spoke about this in that sugya. What happens if Louis did pay Mel some interest? So now Mel has a mitzvah to give the money back to Louis. A mitzvah minatorah, a different mitzvah minatorah, to return the money to you. So what if Louis says then, I'm Michael, I don't need you to give it back to me. Right, so if you recall, that was the machlokas we've shown him what the story is. That the rabbin quoted the Gaonim, that no, nothing doing, there's no machila by ribbis. So you can't willingly pay it, and you can't willingly decline to take it back. While the Rambam, and also the Rosh, and the Shulchan Aruch all paskin that no, at that point, there is mechila. So there are those who understand that whole issue in a certain way. That is, when it talks about the mitzvah of hachzaras ribbis, so perhaps the machlokes between the gaonim who say you can't refuse to take it back and the rishonim who say that you can. So how do you view this idea of paying back ribbis? Are you just giving back somebody money that he deserves? Or is this essentially some kind of act of tshuva, really ben adam l'mako, that you were boleya and iser, that's the language you find in some of the Rishonim, like a kli that absorbed some treifas, you took in money that was not allowed to you halachically in your ideya, and therefore you have to expel it, you have to give it back to the person who gave it to you. So it could be that the view that says there is mechila here is kind of a hybrid a little bit. It says that really, it's a mitzvah min haTorah, it's a mitzvah in the Yoredeya sense, to give back the ribbis. But the nature of the mitzvah is, what's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to treat it like an obligation that you have to this guy, to treat it like a monetary obligation. So theoretically, if those are the parameters, then that guy can say, listen, the Torah requires you to come and deal with me, but I'm allowed to say, I don't want it back. And therefore, it's kind of a combination, that it's about a monetary deal between two people. But there is room for the recipient here to say it's okay and treat it like a interpersonal deal, even though it is a mitzvah to address the situation. So perhaps, and those who want to draw the comparison, that you could say also that when it comes to Pidgin HaBen, that the Torah is basically saying there's a mitzvah, kind of a Yoredeya kind of mitzvah, to view it as if there's a chiyuv between you and the Kohen. So therefore, maybe you could have elements of both. You could have, on the one hand, matanam naslahatzir work, because it is a type of yoredeya kind of nesina, through like a symbolic kind of nesina. But at the same time, we could use rules of motza mechaver or olav haraya, because it is a, at the end of the day, the mitzvah is to engage in this transaction between two people. So I have to confess, as much as I'm saying this idea over, I don't find it very satisfying. And you'll tell me if you agree or if you disagree. Because I think it should actually be inverted. If that's really the case, I would be more likely to say the opposite. That the question of whether you say Hamotzi Mechaver or Olav Haraya is really a question of, do you get involved in the first place or not? Do you say that this transaction has to take place or not? And then, if there is an obligation to have a transaction, you think it should actually go through, and that Matanam Nasa Hachzir shouldn't work. So I find that this, I think Rabbi Chanan's question is a little better than this answer, because I would have guessed that if you want to make such a split, I have an easier time understanding the split the other way. Right, saying that we won't apply Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Haraya, because we'll say there's a mitzvah to do a pidgin event. But that mitzvah, since it's not really a chiyuv, but since the mitzvah then tells you rather to do a transaction with this kohen, you should have to go through with it. Matanam Nasnachzir shouldn't work. So I don't really find this so satisfying, because I think it comes out the opposite of what we need to answer. I don't know if you have a better way to approach it, or think that there is more satisfaction to that answer that I'm giving it, but just wanted to highlight these details. I think maybe Rabbi Chanan's kasha leaves it a little bit stronger than this answer allows for. But maybe it helps a little bit to do a little bit of synergy here. So God willing, tomorrow we'll do Shishi of Parshas Bo. So if you want to understand Pidgin HaBen, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, Sefer HaChinuch talks about Pidgin HaBen in Parshas Korach. That's where the mitzvah is. But when he tells you Mishar Sheh HaMitzvah, when he tells you what the mitzvah is about, says go look to Parshas Bo. Go look to Mitzvah Yudches, which is the mitzvah of Kedushas Bechor. He assumes that if you want to understand Pidgin HaBen, then our modern day practice of paying money to a kohen, so you have to look to the mitzvah of Kedushas Bechor by an animal to see what the theme is. So it's not a perfect match, because understanding what Kedushas Bechor is about doesn't necessarily tell us why there is a mitzvah to pay money to a kohen when you have a Bechor. But we have to kind of build on his words. So there he says, again, this is synergy, because remember this for tomorrow's Shishi. Machbis Bukharis is Shishi of this week's Parsha. We're pretty much on target. So he says that there is a mitzvah to remember how relieved we are that we were saved from Machbis Bukharis, that the Jews didn't have their firstborn taken. And also a general theme of always being makdish, the first thing to God, so the firstborn, the bikurim, the first fruits, all of the firsts, that idea that we try to devote that to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that's the theme here. So we could say that that would help us understand the Matanam Manas Lahachzir idea, that maybe the notion is that we're obligated to do Pidgin HaBen because we're supposed to remember that this is something that is not pashut. The idea that one gets to hold on to their bechor, this is not a given, this isn't the privilege that was given to the Egyptians in this week's parsha, it isn't something that's true always anyway, there's a special hakar satov that has to come with that first. So therefore, okay, so there's a mitzvah to show that this is something that you're ready to pay for, you're ready to value. So the Kohen represents God in that sense, that the Kohen who's now taking the role of the Bechor in the Avoda, so the Kohen represents God to stand in and be Makabel. But it's not really about him. It's not really a chiyuv to the Kohen. So therefore, if the Kohen wants to engage in a Matana Manas Lahatzir, so then that should theoretically perhaps still be consistent with the Tamei HaMitzvah. So at least just in terms of our din in the Gemara, where the Tamei HaMitzvahs fit in, and how we can also get some synergy for our Parsha, perhaps that's at least a little bit compatible. Hi.
There's a letter that the Rebbe wrote to a Catholic priest in the 1950s, where he explains the whole practice of the Pidyon HaBen,
mm-hmm.
and he suggests that Pidyon HaBen is like the restaging of the Akedah, and so that the Kohen is standing in place of God, and that when we give our child to the Kohen, we're recognizing that our child isn't ours. So in that type of sense, like, I could see you arguing that the Rav saying that Netina is the more important
part. Yeah, that's a great har. Is that in community? Okay, I got to take a look at that. Maybe I'll try to take a look for tomorrow. See if it, although, according to that, it's really a Parshas Vayera topic. And I really, but that's a very, very interesting idea. Okay, Shkaya, that fits very nicely. So maybe that could fit into this whole discussion. So just also one more theme about this, the idea of Pidyon HaBen could be viewed either as a chov or as some kind of a mitzvah. That could affect also, there's a machlokas in general, this has a lot of implications. What if this could come up, let's say the father of a baby is not available for a Pidyon HaBen. So it's a major machlokas whether the Pidyon HaBen can be done with shlichus or not. Can somebody else stand in for the father to do a Pidyon HaBen? So the Ramah was of the opinion that no, you can't have shlichus for Pidyon HaBen. The father has to do it himself. And the Vilna Gaon disagrees. The Vilna Gaon says he disagrees doubly. He says not only can you have a shliach and you can utilize the principle of shlucho shel adam kamoso that we often find, but more than that, you don't even need shlichus. That somebody else could step up and do the Pidyon HaBen on the father's behalf because he understands basically a chov. So, if you want to have somebody else pay off your chov, so then, or if somebody else wants to pay off your chov even without you knowing about it, that also could be effective. Now, it's a somewhat of a debatable premise, which is it's an interesting machlokas, and that seems to also surround this issue, that if the point of Pidyon HaBen is that it's just a chi of Nesina in some kind of symbolic way, so one could argue it doesn't really make sense for somebody else to be doing this, somebody who's not the father. The whole point is that the father has to play this role, has to act out this part. And maybe you could say that it's a mitzvah shebegufo, it's really something which just doesn't lend itself to any kind of shlichus. While the Vilna Gaon is suggesting a very different paradigm here, that not only could shlichus work, but you don't even need shlichus, because it's really just about getting that money over to the Kohen, and if somebody else chooses to do that, even without your appointing him, that should work. So it's an interesting discussion as well, which seems to surround this issue and affect the question of Matana Manas HaHachzir, where it should point out. So just to take a few more minutes, then we'll dive in. So as a little bit of an introduction to the Arif Sugya, so I just want to say the following, that what we'll do, God willing, on Monday, when we start this Sugya in the full sense, so I will give you some marmakomos that look at the whole general question of Arev as a topic in and of itself, and we will plug it back into here. And now I'll just call your attention to one or two issues that come up in the interpretation of the Gemara here that you can think about and see how it fits in. So first of all, what's the case? So on the bottom of Avim Beis here, to the top of Zayin and Aleph, Amar Rava, Tein Mana L'Ploni, that if the woman says, right, you need to fill that in, right, because it starts off, Amar Rava, Rava said this. But no, Rava said that if a woman says, Tein Mana L'Ploni, that you should give, she says to her boyfriend, that he should give some money to somebody else, V'akadesh Lach, and I will, through that, marry you, Mekudeshes Midin Arev, that works, that's effective. Now, what in the world works about that, right? The whole point is that the husband is supposed to be giving something to the wife. Chasim is supposed to be giving something to the Kala. And here, that's not happening. He's giving it to a third party. Maybe it's a related third party, maybe it's not. Maybe she's saying, give it to my brother. Maybe she's saying, give it to somebody else. So what exactly is going on here? So somehow, and I'll keep saying somehow because there's so many different avenues that this could take, but somehow this corresponds to a halacha called Arev. So what is the halacha called Arev? Arev is something which is both a din, a halachic construct, but something that very much exists in secular law and civil law, something that has a ton of practical relevance. It's basically the idea of a guarantor. So let's say that Noah wants to borrow money from me. So I don't trust Noah. No offense. This is a hypothetical fake case. Obviously, in real life, I would totally trust you, except with money. So, Josh, who I totally trust, he's got that British accent that always wins. So, Josh comes and says, it's okay, listen, I'm telling you, I'm taking responsibility for this. So, give him the money. Right, so, Josh is able to tell me to give you the money. And then, the halacha will be that if you default, if Noah doesn't pay me back, I can collect from Josh. Now, there are different nuances, there are different types of arev. Can I collect from you however I want? Or do I have to make an effort first to get it back from Noah? Are you both equal options? I could go to whoever I want to get back the money. That depends a little bit what kind of arev it is. But in some form or another, Josh can become actually liable to pay me for the loan that Noah took on. How that works is a topic of a multi-directional machlokas rishonim that we'll talk about on Monday. But all we know is that it does work. Is that even though Josh got nothing from me, it seems, still he's obligated to pay me should the situation arise. So using that model, the Gemara says it could work for a kala also. That even though she's not getting anything and somebody else is getting it on her instruction, that's enough to count it as if she is receiving something. And how that works, again, is going to be tied in to how Arev works. But because we know it works, we know it's possible for Josh to receive nothing and become obligated as if he received something, so too it's possible for the Kala to receive nothing and still become a Kala that way, still become married. So just a couple of details that come out from this Gemara. So especially considering that this sugi is immediately after Matana Manas Lahachzir. So this Gemara, which she says, give Ploni a Shava Pruta. Does it have to be a actual gift? Well, what if she says, lend a Shava Pruta to somebody else? Does that also work? What would you think?
Yes.
Okay, why would you say that?
Because the nature of whatever is being done for the woman remains the same regardless of what's being done. So,
it's an interesting assumption.
Yeah.
I think we'll see on Monday. It's not so obvious, but it could be. And there are a lot of Rishonim who say that it works. A lot of Rishonim say, Matana or Halva, that even if she says, lend to somebody else, that's going to work. Even though if you lent it to her directly, it wouldn't work. Right? So there's something very interesting going on here. If you were to give it directly to her as a loan, that wouldn't work. But to lend to somebody else on her instruction, that does work according to most of the, or a good number of the Rishonim, and we'll have to discuss why that is. It's interesting, Ha'ara number one, that connects a little bit to the sugya we just saw. Another Ha'ara that connects to a sugya that we saw at the end of last semester is... Okay, so this is this chuppah, right? This very unusual chuppah. So, okay, you call everybody up, you call up the Edim, and then the Kala takes the microphone and says, give a Shava Pruta to my old boyfriend, you know, or something strange. You know, give a Shava Pruta to some other guy, and I'll marry you. Okay, he gives her the ring, Edim, whole story. Is that enough? Does he have to say Harayat? So, some of the Rishonim fill that in. That yes, he's still, that the premise is he's doing this on her instruction, but we still need him to talk. We still need Harayat Mekudeshes, because we saw the end of last semester the whole sugya of the Chi of Amira, of Nasan Huv Amrahi. So should this be a problem of Nasan Huv Amrahi? So that's an interesting question, right? Is this a situation where he's doing the giving and she's doing the talking? So some of the Rishonim assume, yeah, it would be a problem if you did it like that, and Takehi has to say something. Or there are Rishonim who say that this creates an Asukim Ba'oso Indian situation. Some of the, that we were about to say?
Yeah, that's what Rishonim is talking
about. Right, so you see some of the Rishonim say that explicitly, that with this kind of scenario, so now his giving is the completion of that instruction, that basically constitutes an Asukim Ba'oso Indian. So these are some very interesting details that come out. Again, it's a fascinating sugya. Arev, as we'll see, has a lot going for it. Major Shas sugya, tons of practical relevance, very unusual relevance to narrative sections of Chumash. It's really a kolbo, one of the fascinating sugyas. So Look forward to doing that on Monday. And Eben Kanani, we'll see, also plays a role, believe it or not. You may think this is a strange scenario. Eved Kenani plays a role in just about every halachic wedding that you see nowadays. So that's also maybe surprising. So we'll see how that comes up. So a lot of fascinating stuff ahead. And then you remember our agenda. Then we just want to do Adam Chashuv. And then after that, we're going to transition to the very fascinating Kibbutz Avim, Mitzvah Seishas, Mangramel Sugis in the end of the parish. So a lot of wonderful stuff coming up ahead.